This is The Takeaway. I'm John Huckenberry. Thanks so much for listening. Lost Boys and the Men Who Go Home to Build a Nation. A nation at war. We're going to explore the nation of South Sudan on the program today. Tragedy and joy in this story. We'll also look at some infantile-seeming politics in New Jersey involving a governor, a mayor, a bridge, and those orange cones that shut down traffic lanes. It's a big scandal for a governor with presidential aspirations. Also, to go with the footwork, you need the right music. Olympic gold medalist Christy Yamaguchi gives us a playlist preview of what skaters might be considering for the 2014 Games and shares the out there musical moments from her days on the ice. You got a theme for your life?
This is Kira from Jacksonville, Florida. If I had a soundtrack for my life, the song At Last by Etta James would play four times. The day I married my husband and at the birth of each of my three boys, the four finest moments of my life.
At last.
Share yours at 877-8-MY-TAKE. We'll share them throughout the hour. But we begin in the nation of South Sudan, where peace talks between the country's warring factions fell apart on Wednesday. The three-year-old nation was the result of a historic peace agreement that ended more than 20 years of conflict between northern and southern Sudan. But the end of conflict in South Sudan did not echo what happened decades earlier in South Africa.
The time for the healing of the wounds has come. We enter into a covenant that we shall build the society in which all South Africans, both black and white, will be able to walk tall, a rainbow nation at peace with itself and the world.
That's Nelson Mandela during his presidential inauguration in South Africa back in 1994. Alex DeVol is director of the World Peace Foundation at Tufts University's Fletcher School. He says that the crisis in South Sudan shows that in that country, unlike South Africa, wounds have not been healed and are opening up once again while the international community looks away.
There are liberation movements that have succeeded in that task. And the basic thing that they have done is rather than taking their ethical standards from their adversary and saying, you know, we are oppressed, let's say, by the apartheid regime in South Africa, and therefore we will behave, we'll feel ourselves justified in behaving the same way. But we must rise above that. That is what Nelson Mandela did. He rose above the ethics of oppression and discrimination and abuse that he faced under the apartheid government and forged a new South Africa. The leaders of South Sudan failed very spectacularly to do that. And what I think is particularly regrettable is that they were allowed to get away with it. Many of the friends of South Sudan allowed them to live down to those low standards on the argument that the government in Khartoum that had been oppressing them for so long was even worse. And I think in retrospect, that was a grave error. They should have been challenged to live up to their rhetoric of liberation, to make that not just an aspiration, but actually a practical reality. And we're seeing the tragic consequences of that now.
Who would have been the credible intervener here, and who could have engaged a reconciliation process like South Africa had that could have worked? It's a very different place than South Africa.
It's true, but there was, in the 1990s, the liberation movement in South Sudan did fall apart, and instigated by civil society, in particular by the churches, and indeed by some members of the liberation movement itself, there was a process of what they called people-to-people peace and reconciliation, and it made a lot of progress. Unfortunately, the leadership of South Sudan, because they saw this as a threat to their untrammeled and unaccountable power, did their best to circumvent, indeed, to block it. And when peace was achieved in 2005, rather than addressing these underlying issues, the new president of the then autonomous government of South Sudan, Salva Kiir, what he did was he simply used the money that was available from oil revenues, several billion dollars a year, simply to pay off everybody, just to say, oh, come and share at this trough. And we won't get to grips with the underlying issues, the issues of building a democratic political order, building basic institutions. And the semblance of unity was maintained because everyone in South Sudan said, well, we have a chance for independence coming 6 years after that peace agreement. That chance was the referendum of 2011, almost exactly 3 years ago now. And they didn't want to spoil that. And in not addressing these basic issues of the political structure, the democratic accountability of the leadership of the liberation movement, they set in train the basis for today's crisis.
Couldn't that argument also be applied in South Africa in the sense that the African National Congress maintains a hold on the government that conceals underlying political tensions that were talked about at the memorial service for Nelson Mandela, that that there are forces at work now that are destabilizing, given all of the correct moves that the South Africans made post-independence?
Any government of this type, especially any government that comes out of a long struggle against oppression, what the ANC did was, because of its disciplined and cohesive leadership and its commitment to a strategic goal of a democratic and non-racial South Africa, it was able to lead its people and its movement through that extraordinarily difficult path of reconciliation and establish what is, for all its faults, still a vibrant, effective, constitutional, and basically a fundamentally a free society. In South Sudan, we simply didn't see that. The elections of 2010 that re-elected this government were in many cases very, very fraudulent. There were no basic freedoms.
Alex Duvall, is it the case that the history of Africa in the last 75 years suggests that resolving differences between blacks and whites is actually not as challenging as resolving sectarian battles among blacks, the case of Rwanda, the case of South Sudan right now, and the instability in South Africa right now?
I think it's not a question of, in any way, of African leaders or African peoples finding it impossible to overcome these problems. It's a question of the maturity of political leadership, and I think the maturity of political leadership in South Sudan has been sorely lacking. And I fear that one of the reasons why it's been sorely lacking is the low standards that have been expected from it by its friends abroad.
Alex Duvall is Executive Director of the World Peace Foundation at Tufts University's Fletcher School. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome.
The creation of South Sudan was the culmination of a decades-long story for the so-called Lost Boys of Sudan, who left the conflict zone as boys to come to the United States to help their families. Boys like John, who became men in their time in the U.S., working men hoping to help the people back home.
I decided personally not to go to school until I changed their situation by sending money.
I am hoping to bring my family here so that I know they are well and I know they are secured.
That voice of Lost Boy John from the 2006 award-winning documentary God Grew Tired of Us. The Lost Boys found Americans committed to helping them, people like Deb Dawson from Fargo, North Dakota. She's the founder of African Soul, African American Heart, a boarding school for girls in South Sudan. And it's in Fargo, North Dakota, that she met Joseph Akul Makir, one of the Lost Boys.
He came here in 2003 with four younger siblings, all orphans. And I met him in 2007. And he told me that he had escaped his village in 1987. And he wanted to go back and help orphans in his home village. And I did that.
Deb says that as a man, John is now back in his country trying to hold it together, a fight he is fighting with other Lost Boys and with Deb Dawson, together fighting not to lose their new country.
People don't know where to turn, and most of these fighters are teenage boys, and you give them guns and you say, this is what you're to do, and they go and do it. And I think I've heard in some cases it's poised as an ethnic conflict, but I don't think it's necessarily ethnic. Really, these people are not so far different from each other. It's a bunch of teenage boys that are told to fight these people. And now some of these boys have been injured or they have no food. And so they are on their way home. They're giving up the fight.
So it sounds like you would agree with the analysis of some academics who have looked at this from a geopolitical standpoint and said that South Sudan suffers from a sense that the international community has really had low expectations for South Sudan, haven't encouraged them to take the high road, have really just sort of left them to the devices of teenage boys with arms and not really encouraged the kind of nation building that would have helped here.
Yes, and I don't know, you know, nation building, I guess, has maybe a negative connotation in many ways. It's not like we absolutely no better for this area. But I think the leaders have lost touch with diplomacy and with any way of communicating. You know, these guys have a history that goes back to the war days with the North and being on opposite sides of rebel groups. And so that doesn't, you know, bode particularly well. The country has a rate of literacy for women of 1%. You know, it seems to me if you don't educate women, you don't have a country where they're going to teach their sons to grow up and find a way to solve problems besides fighting.
Now, you know, Nelson Mandela said in South Africa, you know, we got to move on. You got to put those feuds behind you. You got to move forward. Absolutely. How does that message get articulated in South Sudan, even from the point of view of a humanitarian aid worker from Fargo, North Dakota?
You know, I think you would see it throughout the country if you talk to the people. You know, the people, by and large, understand this and know this. And what they want is peace for their families. They want an opportunity to go to school if they're children. You know, they want to have access to medical care. They want to believe that their lives aren't going to just be spent hiding in the bush. They don't want to suffer from, you know, so many preventable diseases. I mean, people are, you know, you escape this, where do you hide? The swamp. And then you're being eaten up by mosquitoes and getting malaria and many preventable kind of diseases. You know, the people do not talk the way these political leaders talk. And even those that are responsible for some of the small difficulties that happen, which is a lot of cattle rustling between groups, some of it due to the desire for dowry for marriage. The poverty has led to earlier and earlier marriage of young girls. In their past history, this wasn't the case. But, you know, when you have extreme poverty and little hope for the future, you marry off your daughter at puberty because it brings cattle into the family and it feeds people for a while.
Final thoughts on what the future holds, do you think? And what would Joseph Makir say about the state of affairs in South Sudan?
Well, he's quite worried about it. In fact, he was just here in Fargo recently and has returned. He's director of food security in South Sudan, so he does have some ability to talk to some of the powers that be. But he has children that live here, and he has also one child living just born Christmas Day in South Sudan. And so he has a vested interest in the country's future, and he went back there. You know, he went to work for the government there and has been one of the people, you know, trying to bring about change.
Well, maybe it's the case that it's the boys who aren't lost as much as the country right now.
Yeah, I think there's hope. Some people would tell you it's hopeless, but I always think there's hope. There's, you know, reasonable people who can have their minds changed. And if these leaders can be brought together for the good of all, you know, that's the hope.
Lost boys become men, and trying to take responsibility for the unrest in South Sudan. Deb Dawson is the founder of African Soul, American Heart, a boarding school for girls in South Sudan. She speaks to us from Fargo, North Dakota. Deb, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you very much. I appreciate the opportunity.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.